Would you join with me in prayer? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. This week marks my first anniversary as senior pastor of United Church of Chapel Hill. Thank you. I'm so pleased that you are happy with my longevity. This year in my life has been very challenging and also deeply gratifying. It's never easy to join a new community of faith, although we do our best to welcome newcomers into our life with special rituals and baptisms and name tags. But it's not even easy if you're the pastor and everyone is trying extra hard to make a little bit of room for you. And it's been especially hard for us, I think, because we've had to say several goodbyes in recent months. And some things have been shifting around in our life together as a church. Worship in La Mesa, for example, has really taken off this year. Three times since November, La Mesa has attracted more than 100 people to worship. If you look at the numbers, it's the only worship service of the three that we offer that is consistently growing. And 2 weeks ago, there were more worshipers in La Mesa than we had at our 11 o'clock service in the sanctuary. That's a new thing for our life as a church. United Church of Chapel Hill has said for years that it wants to grow as a more diverse and inclusive congregation. In some ways, we don't seem to be succeeding, but if you walk through the sanctuary at 11 o'clock, or through the fellowship hall at 11 o'clock, it's really hard not to conclude that we are succeeding there. The room feels fairly full with people of color and Spanish language speakers. We've been counting worshipers in La Mesa and in every worship service, but we haven't yet undertaken a serious study of what the growth in La Mesa means for us. And let's be honest, the new life we're seeing in La Mesa has created some tensions that we're all living with. We've had to make some space accommodations. There are some budget constraints. Some of us have had moments where we've been fairly snappish about it all. It's not the only thing that's changed in the life of our church over the past 2 or 3 years, but it is perhaps the best example of the Holy Spirit shaking us up and shifting the sands underneath our feet. God is at work in this place. We've noticed the Spirit stirring here, and our awareness of God's mysterious presence in our ministry raises all sorts of paradoxical emotions for us. It feels both very threatening. What else do we love that we'll have to lose? And very promising. God is surely about to reveal grace in some new ways that we didn't see coming. And that's the scene that's set for us on the Mount of Transfiguration. Frightful and thrilling. Dreadful and filled with hope. Ominous and providential. This is a text full of contrasts. The misty air held against the clarity of vision. The dark clouds preceding the radiant light. The drowsy disciples awakened suddenly with swiftly beating heartbeats, the foolish, idle chatter set against the unquestionable wisdom of God. In this text, we witness the absolute befuddlement of the three most obedient disciples, Peter and James and John, deeply confused at the same time that they are enchanted with wonder. What is God doing here? And I find myself in a similar place today, not sure what to make of all that I have been seeing. Intrigued with curiosity about the recent movement of the Spirit, somewhat afraid about what all this might mean for me and for all of us. Since late last year, the church council has been in some conversation about how to lead the church toward the adoption of a strategic plan that would clarify our direction for the next 5 years or so. Strategic planning was begun here before I arrived, but it was put on hold so that Jill and Rick Edens could retire. And a lot has changed over the past 2 or 3 years. God's Spirit has been moving among us in new ways. La Mesa is now a strong and sustainable worship presence in our midst. We have more Spanish speakers and more people of color. Our programs for youth ministry and choral ministry are growing, but they are limited by very unrealistic schedules. We all love to hear the youth choir perform in this worship service, but if the youth choir comes here at 8:45, that means that they are at United Church on a Sunday from 7 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. That's a long day. Leaders have stepped forward to help us increase our outreach to African Americans and to the Latinx community, and we've become much more intentional about including transgender and gender nonconforming people in our midst. We have a very different staff now. We've got to take stock of how the Spirit has been moving here and consider how we'd like to respond to all this evidence of the graciousness of God. So there will be more information in the coming days about how we intend to complete a process of strategic planning. What I can tell you now is that the church council believes we are on a timetable of 8 to 10 months for adopting as a whole congregation a unifying strategic plan. The council has asked Nick Carter to serve as chair of what we're calling the coordinating team. And Nick is working now to recruit 5 to 6 people to join him. The purpose of this coordinating team is to engage the whole church in participating in the development of this plan. And the first step is to conduct what Nick is calling an environmental scan. This means that we're stepping back to observe, what on earth is happening here? Can we begin to understand what these changes mean in the midst of our community? Membership, worship attendance, pledged income and other revenues to the church, program participation, demographic makeup, our relation to the community and neighbors outside of our walls. This team is going to be crunching a lot of numbers, internally and externally. What is God doing here? Like the disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration, there's a cloudy mist before the sun starts to break through. This is a church-wide process that will call on the participation of every household in the church. And if you know Nick Carter, you're aware that you can expect some fairly clear communications about what is happening when and how you can be involved. But the church can't just put its mission on hold while we sort out what we're going to prioritize about our future. The ministry that we share isn't just about us. It's not just for the people who gather here in worship on Sunday mornings. Indeed, the strongest critique that might be made of our ministry in the past 2 or 3 years of transition is that we've become altogether far too focused on our internal arrangements. It's time for us to do something really big for somebody else. And that's partially why it's so important for us to participate in the IFC's Food First campaign. The Apostle Paul reflected on the fear, confusion, and vexation that the disciples experienced in the Transfiguration story. Actually, when Paul wrote about it, he traced it back to its Old Testament antecedents, when Moses, looking for a clear vision from God, climbs to the top of Mount Sinai. Talk about dread. Hebrew tradition had held that no one could look God face to face in the eye without falling over dead. We build up these myths that Moses was such a courageous and clear-sighted leader, forgetting that every step he took from the burning bush to Pharaoh's palace through 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, he did unwillingly. He did afraid, fraught with peril. He ascends to the summit of Mount Sinai, not because he's looking for an adventure, but because he has been summoned. He didn't want to go there. He doesn't want to look God in the eye. But he knows that the Hebrews only make it through the wilderness by God's faithfulness. Interpreting the story explains the Apostle Paul. Since we have hope, we act with great boldness. The Food First campaign will create a central hub for food security in downtown Carrboro. It's a $5.6 million campaign meant to strengthen the IFC's mission to feed the poor in our community. And it will move the existing food pantry out of a dark, wet, and windowless basement and give back to the town of Chapel Hill the kitchen facilities that they've been promising to repossess any day now. The campaign will build for the IFC a suitable headquarters for the food, housing, and caseworking services that they provide. And they're not getting any government funding to pay for it. Over the past year and a half, they've raised almost all of what they need, and we're all coming together to push them over the final hump. Our congregation was actually asked for a lead gift to this campaign way back in the beginning. But the church was between pastors at that time, and the church council reluctantly concluded that we just couldn't make a gift in those uncertain days. But our situation is different today. We are a strong church with 3 worship services that are evolving and adapting in incredibly exciting ways. We have growing programs for youth and for children in ministry. We increased our budget by 9% in the last year. And we're now embarking on a process to finish a unifying strategic plan that will help us to sort out some of the more complex questions in our life together. The sands are shifting, and the Spirit is moving in some new ways. We don't know exactly what's going on here, but we have a palpable spirit of hope. It's time for us to do something for our neighbors and to act with great boldness because of our hope
as Paul says. So we're asking every household in the church to make a special gift to the Food First campaign. Our appeal for Food First will last throughout the month of March, and our goal is to make a gift of at least $30,000 to the IFC at the end of this month. I can already tell that there is tremendous enthusiasm for this effort. We sent an email announcing this appeal to the congregation on Friday morning at 9:30. And by the time I left the office, we had collected more than $12,000 in pledges. We can do this. In 5 years, when we're working on our next strategic plan, I think we're going to look back at this gift to the IFC as a turning point. That's the moment, we're going to say. That's the moment when United Church awoke from its slumber like those drowsy disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration. That's the moment when it stopped worrying about its internal needs. That's the moment when United Church really started to get clear about its purpose. That's the moment when the sun started to shine through the clouds. We were still scared, if you remember. We were still uncertain. We thought there was a good chance that God might at any moment strike us dead. But it was also because of our hope in the promises of God that we acted with such great boldness and remembered that we don't just come to this church for ourselves, but for the sake of God's work in our community. Let's come together and get this done in the next month. Thanks be to God.